content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Radio Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the August 2025 issue of Scout Life. On the front cover, we have pictures. Firefighters battle of wildlife in Castaic, California, near Los Angeles. Note, these firefighters are not scouts. Heroes Among Us is the title. Scouts help their communities after devastating disasters. Down at the bottom right of the front cover, troop floats a river and explores a cave. Meet these smiley snakes, plus comics, jokes, and much, much more. Let's see what we can look forward to in this issue. Departments, page 2, Airy on the Prairie. Page 3, Heads Up. Page 7, Ask Us Anything. Page 8, Scout Life Headliners. Page 40, Fitness First. Religious Emblems on page 41. What's Up? What's Up on page 41? Page 42, Reader Favorites. On page 43, Think and Grin. Let's go right to page 2, Airy on the Prairie. Dear Scout, I read a lot of your magazines when I was a little. Often I would go straight to the jokes. But the more I grew as a scout, the more I appreciated the other things. A big inspiration for me to continue scouting was the stories of scouts saving others. Thank you for all the work you do inspiring the young generations of scouts. That's from Michael F. in Omaha, Nebraska.
I love to hear how scouts like you have been inspired by the pages of Scout Life. And, Michael, you get it. The jokes are a hoot. But the stories of bravery, adventure, and leadership truly make your scouting journey soar.
I liked your article on sleeping bags and which ones to choose. I would like to see more sleeping bags for warmer weather, as I live in Florida. The bags that I usually find will bake you unless you are sleeping in some 50-degree weather, which is quite rare here. Typically, in the summer of early fall, I'm looking at 70 or 80-degree temps when I go to bed. That from Owen H. in Orlando, Florida.
You definitely don't want to feel like a roasted turkey in your sleeping bag, Owen. Florida's warm nights call for lightweight, breathable options. The gear guy says to look for bags with ventilation zippers, moisture-wicking fabric, and, most important, warm weather temperature ratings. Stay cool! Ah!
I read your magazines every time I get them. I really enjoy looking at the gear guy section. It helps me find new gear whenever I need it. Could the next one be about hiking boots? That's from Wyatt F. in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
I had to really get some boots on the ground to adequately answer your letter, Wyatt. Good hiking boots are essential for my scout who wants to trek comfortably and avoid blisters. Check out what the gear guy says at go.scoutlife.org/boots and look for boots with good ankle support and a solid sole.
I've enjoyed every single activity I've done as a scout, and one of my favorite memories was learning how to paddleboard during my week at Camp La Noche. It was an unforgettable experience, and I wish I could go back to relive those moments. That from Christian G. in Miami, Florida.
Sounds like an adventure that made waves, Christian. Paddleboarding is an incredible skill and a neat way to get out of the water. Luckily, your scout members are feather light, so you can take them with you for life and hopefully put those paddleboarding skills to use on many outings.
My brother works at the DPEC non-northern tier program in the winters. He works with the sled dogs and takes crews out for their treks. I was wondering, will you do a story regarding the UCPIC program and staff there? That from Sarah D. in Shohonta, Arizona.
How cool! Literally! The UCPIC program is a legendary cold weather adventure, Sarah, and I like your advice to help more scouts get the scoop on what it's like to work at Northern Tier. It's a great time to check out their winter staff needs. Head to our Scout Camp job board to explore for yourself. jobs.scoutlife.org. Okay, it's time to spread my wings and fly. That's not a metaphor. I truly need to get a move on because I'm late for the Flock of Eagles show at the Beak Theater tonight. Until then, time.
Fast facts, heads up, watermelon. National Watermelon Day is August 3rd. Watermelon is rind, is nutritious. You can eat it pickled or in stir fries. Some cultures use the rind to make jam and juice. The largest watermelon ever was grown by a man in Tennessee in 2013. It weighed more than 350 pounds. Watermelon is full of nutrients, like vitamins A and C and a bit of potassium. It's also a great low-calorie snack. The fruit is one of the symbols of summer. Watermelons aren't melons. They're classified as pepos, a type of berry with a tough rind. A watermelon is more than 90% water. They originated in northeastern Africa. Watermelon seeds have been found in 4,000-year-old Egyptian tombs. Watermelons come in different colors, including red, orange, yellow, and white. Next, ask us anything. Heads up. My parents don't like me going on troop outings, and they make me stay home instead. What should I do? Steve, explain to your parents exactly why going to these events is important to you and what lessons and skills you hope to take away from them. For example, rank advancement and merit badges are nearly impossible to earn without going on these outings. In other words, it's not all about socializing and goofing around with your friends. For good measure, throw these stats at them. More than 75% of former scouts agree that the values they learned in scouting continue to be important to them today. They are also more likely to have higher levels of education and higher earnings. It's hard to argue with results like those. Jenny, first off, find out why they don't want you to go. Chances are it is some combination of cost and concern for you. To deal with the first issue is some choose one of the more affordable outings and maybe offer to kick in some of your own cash. For the second issue, ask your troop leader to have a quick chat with your parents. He or she might be able to ease some of their worries while also making a great case on your behalf. Question. I'm a middle child, and I don't get much attention from my parents. It all goes to my older and younger siblings. The only way I can get attention is to get in trouble. How can I get attention some other way? Jenny, I asked my little sister Casey, who is the middle kid in our family, how she dealt with it. She said the most important thing to realize is that you're different from your siblings. Their strengths and passions aren't the same as yours, and that's totally fine. I played field hockey, so Casey tried to do the same and hated it. Eventually, she embraced her real interest, gymnastics. There wasn't a team at our high school, so she started the team herself and was the only member. Even though we always knew how talented she was, this made her stand out even more. You can bet we were at every one of her meets cheering her on. Steve, the good news is that your parents probably don't mean to be inattentive. You may be feeling it more than it actually is, and the situation will likely improve with time. The better news is that being a middle child might just set you up for success down the road. What do John F. Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln, and Susan B. Anthony have in common? They're all middle children, just like you. Have a question for Jenny and Steve? Right? Ask a question. Ask us anything. S306, Box PO 152079, Irving, Texas, 75015-2079, or at scoutlife.org. Your name will be kept confidential. Picking up the pieces. When disaster strikes, scouts jump into action, even if they are impacted. Sienna Nocas noticed the dark smoke when she looked out the window the morning of January 7th. The 16-year-old didn't think much of it. This was California, after all. Wildfires happen often, and they usually stay in the mountains. This fire, though, was different. By the afternoon, Sienna was scrambling through the bedroom, gathering whatever keepsake she could, her yearbook, her favorite stuffed animals, her merit badge sash. This wasn't supposed to happen. The Nocas family lived just one block from a fire station in the Pacific Palisades. But as the flames swept through the Los Angeles neighborhood, even the fire station was in danger of being burned to the ground. It was so unreal, the life scout from Troop 222 says. It happened so fast. It looked like the whole hillside was on fire. Once we left, there was no coming back. The next morning, the family's fears were confirmed. Their home was gone, as were thousands of homes and other buildings in the Pacific Palisades in the Eden Canyon area. Many members of Troop 223 were also impacted by the inferno, one of the worst the city had ever endured. Still, when faced with destruction, scouts looked to each other and their communities to figure out how they could help. Rising from the ash. A natural disaster not only can rob people of their homes, but it also can steal their cherished mementos and sense of security. In an instant, friends and family might need to move away to seek stability, forced to start their lives anew. It's healthy to grieve what is lost. To heal, it's important to take care of yourself. We all try to stay positive, says Dylan Schaefer, 11, a scout with Troop 223. The important thing is we're okay, but it's still hard because of all the memories we had there. At first, it was a mix of feelings. I was sad. I was mad. Then I was grateful. The scout oath states to help other people at all times. It's not just always easy, especially when you're hurting too. But for the scouts of Troop 223, they sought those opportunities. Life scouts like Sienna altered their Eagle Scout project plan so they could comfort and aid their neighbors. Some helped others sift through the ash to find any sentimental items. I learned just how important it is to support other people, says Life Scout William Chapin, 15, who contacted companies for donations and discount code to help replace lost scouting gear. Scouts have meant a lot. It's been a great source of helping me find resources and help other people. Troop 225 also met at schools to donate clothes and toiletries, and they partnered with community groups to organize contributions coming from around the country. All of the scout law was embodied through this, says Eagle Scout Hunter Young. 18, many people lost their homes. It might take several years to rebuild. Scouts are there, ready to help with whatever they need, and you can help a great deal. Change in plans. A few scouts before the fires in Southern California, the other side of the nation was hit with a different kind of natural disaster, Hurricane Helene. This deadly storm struck Florida with winds reaching 140 miles per hour. As it moved north, it dumped rain, especially in North Carolina, which received more than 30 inches in some places. The combination of high wind and flash flooding left a wake of destruction across several states. Sea Scout Ship 94 of Fayetteville, North Carolina, had planned a trip to a boat show in Maryland. But after seeing the extensive damage from the hurricane, the group decided to help. It was a last-minute thing, says Noah Zach, 19, an ordinary Sea Scout. We were sitting around a table and said, let's go do this, because it's doing good for the community. The ship skipper located a nonprofit organization that was coordinating service opportunities in the Appalachian Mountains. There was plenty to do, organizing donations, clearing brush, and helping people clean up their homes. The Sea Scouts pitched in where they could, standing strong. Troop 173 of Harrisburg, North Carolina, had camping plans that the hurricane disrupted, so the guys changed their focus and met at a Christian retreat center that was distributing meats to nearby towns that were impacted. During the 2 days the scouts were there, they helped cook and package about 4,500 meals. It's an obligation of a scout to stand up and help, says Colin Ritchie, 15, a life scout. It was a life-changing experience, and I'm glad I did it. Many of them were surprised by the damage they saw in western North Carolina. Bridges torn in half, buildings swept from their foundations, and riverbanks littered with debris. It put a perspective that this could happen any time in any place, says Grant Cosby, 14, a first-class scout. It helped me get out of my comfort zone and try to make a difference and do the best I could. A couple of weeks after Helene broke up, another hurricane hit Florida. Hurricane Milton churned in the Gulf, growing into one of the strongest storms on record. It slowed before making landfall, but still packed some wind speeds of 120 miles per hour. Both storms shut down schools for weeks. During that time, Troop 77 and PAC 7 of Newport Richey, Florida, cleaned up debris and handed out meals. Though they had been through hurricanes before, the scouts noticed Helene and Milton were different. It was shocking to see all the water lines left on houses. Some had 6-foot water marks, says Cash Kehoe, 12, a tenderfoot scout with Troop 77. This is why it's so important to evacuate if you're in a flood zone. Being prepared for natural disasters can help keep you safe. Always plan ahead and have a detailed plan to evacuate, says Bryce Young, 14, a Star Scout. Afterward, scouts prepare to help pick up the pieces. After a natural disaster, we should help other people, says Grant Davis, 11, a scout with Troop 77. It is important to show people that we care. We're not just there to help them physically, but we are there to help support them. Scouts helping scouts. Many scouts, families, and councils were impacted by these natural disasters, including more than 125 families in Southern California. Scouting units from nearby 24 states and even one from the United Kingdom responded, financially supporting the families. Councils helped replace their uniforms lost in the blaze. But some of the simplest heartfelt gestures scouts received were encouraging messages from other scouts, plus offers to go camping with them when they could. It's a remembering the soul of scouting, says Eagle Scout Colin Young, 16 of Troop 223. It does make us stronger as a community, having endured this. We have other people who are in this with us. We will recover. End of article. Next article, the Nature Crew, garter snakes, reptiles with a smile. Garter snakes are some of the best known snakes, but why are they called garter snakes? Well, they look a lot like an old-fashioned piece of clothing by the same name. Before stretchy socks were created in the 1930s, people wore garters to keep socks from sliding down. These garters often had striped or checked patterns. So one story goes that when biologists were naming the snakes, they thought they looked like sock garters. Some people believe the name comes from a twist on the word garden, since garter snakes are often found in or near gardens. They've got the look. Garter snakes belong to the genus Themos, Greek for bush snake. They are found from southern Canada to Costa Rica and live in all of the lower 48 states. Most of the 37 species in this genus are named garter snakes, but there are two skinny ones called ribbon snakes and two in Mexico called mountain meadow snakes. Most garter snakes have dark bodies, brown, black, or gray, with light stripes from head to tail. They can also have a checkered pattern or a combination of the two. One even has side-to-side stripes in a ladder pattern. Typically, one bold stripe goes down the spine with two other stripes, one on each side of the body. But the checkered patterns vary a lot, from very pronounced to absent, which goes for the stripes too. Stripe and checker colors also vary a lot, from green, blue, and white to yellow, red, and orange. Unlike venomous snakes, garters have a rounded head, not triangular, plus large round eyes. They also seem to have a permanent smile. Many have dark vertical chin stripes under the mouth, and they often have a bicolored tongue, red or orange, with a black tip. What's for dinner? Garter snakes are considered non-venomous and harmless to humans. However, some produce a minor venom or toxin in their saliva that can paralyze earthworms and other small prey. They also eat slugs, snails, small amphibians, insects, and small rodents and birds on occasion. A few species have mostly in water and hunt for fish. Many are habitat specialists and have small ranges. The most abundant species, however, in the common garter snake, which is found in much of the United States. As there are 12 subspecies of common garter snake, they can look totally different depending on where you see them. Most garter snakes prefer woodlands or grassy areas, but some are highly aquatic, and a few are desert dwellers. They are diurnal, meaning they're active during the day. Big winter sleepover. Being cold-blooded makes it hard for snakes to move quickly or find prey when temperatures drop. Many species hibernate over the winter, and common garter snakes den together underground to share body warmth. Winter dens may have thousands or even tens of thousands of snakes. In fact, common garter snakes form the biggest gathering of snakes in the world. Large numbers also come together during mating seasons, which can take place right before or after hibernation. The rest of the time, garter snakes are typically solitary. But scientists recently discovered that garter snakes also like to hang out with close friends. Social groups typically include three or four snakes, but may number almost 50. Females give birth to live young. The eggs develop inside her. She may have anywhere from 5 to 80 young, depending on the species. Neither she nor the male provide any parental care. The young are born ready to fend for themselves. With most species, the young are about 5 to 9 inches long and will reach anywhere from 2 to 4 feet when adults. Do your part. While most species have stable numbers, at least 7 have declining populations. One that is considered threatened is the giant garter snake, the largest species, which reaches up to 65 inches in length. That's almost 5.5 feet. Found in California's Central Valley, it was named the official snake of the state this past April. The other threatened species is a narrow-head garter snake, which lives only in Arizona, New Mexico, and northern Mexico. Two subspecies of otherwise stable garter snake species are also endangered or threatened. Habitat loss is a major problem for at-risk garter snakes. Getting run over by vehicles is another. Do your part to help these smiling, beneficial reptiles by educating others about the great job garter snakes do controlling yard and garden pests. Let's go to Think and Grin. Elizabeth, what part of the pizza order earned is its pioneering merit badge? Alvin, I'm not sure. Elizabeth, the garlic knots. That from Elizabeth E. in Clifton, Virginia. Austin, what did Della wear? Cameron, what? Austin, a new jersey. That from Austin D. in Littleton, Colorado. Kendall, where do hamburgers and hot dogs go to dance? Leah, where? Kendall, the meatball. That's from Kendall K. in Cridersville, Ohio. Tommy, when is the moon the heaviest? Rocco, when? Tommy, when it's full. That's from Tommy A. in Westwood, Massachusetts. Tyler, have you seen the new tornado movie? Jason, no. Why? Tyler, it had a real plot twister. That's from Tyler C. in Copley, Ohio. And finally, Dan, what do you call a spider's computer? Programs. Tom, what? Dan, websites. From Tom D. in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.